I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Our topic today, how to turn fear and stress into strengths. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. And if you'd like more information, please email me, as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this a very interactive program. So on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to you as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. And at the conclusion of our program, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, because we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. You can also print off the slides. You'll see a print icon in the lower right-hand corner. Our special guest with us today is Paul David Walker. Paul and I have known each other a long, long time. He's a wonderful human being, a wonderful friend, and an over-the-top business person. Many of you know Paul from his best-selling book, Unleashing Genius, and if you haven't read it, the information for getting a copy is on your screen. Also, you'll want to take a look at Paul's new book when it comes out, Invent Your Future, Seven Imperatives for the 21st Century. I can't wait. I've been hearing about it, and when you start seeing the publicity coming out or notifications, get one. It's going to be phenomenal. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff for over 25 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with includes Starkist Foods, Vaughn's Grocery Stores, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing organizations, global utilities, service and consulting organizations. Paul is the founder of Genius Sewing Partners and works with both domestic and international companies to improve their bottom line today and for planning for the future. I feel privileged to have Paul with us to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. And registration for our next program will begin at the end of this program today, which will be the keys for using performance incentives. Paul, I want to welcome you. Thank you again for being on Open Line.
Well, thank you, Dana. It's a great introduction. I appreciate it. And it's always fun to talk about these things. How to turn fear and stress into strengths. So, the first slide talks about the impact of fear and stress. And I want to say right out front that there is a method to do this, and I think you're going to be fascinated when we see how to do that. If not, you might have questions. But most people think that stress is just part of life, and fear is part of life. And it is, but it doesn't have to be. That's where we're going to go. So obviously, fear weakens the immune system. I think that if you study doctors, they say somewhere between 80 and 95% of all disease is caused by stress. It weakens the immune system. It creates people who miss work. Your absenteeism goes up. And creates what I call tribal warfare within the company. And, you might say, well, why is that? Why does it create tribal warfare? Well, if you ever walk into a room of people, all of which are in a bad mood, and try to persuade them the value of your business or the value of working harder, it's tough. When people are in a bad mood, when people are stressed, they're not interested in your motivational speech, and they're just trying to get away with doing as much as they can and still keep their jobs. So it has an enormous impact. Not to mention insurance claims, which go up in highly stressed organizations, hospitalization, people get sick, they have ulcers, they have colon bursts, any number of things that you might not think are directly related to stress, but they all occur. And they all affect the vitality of the company. Why is that?
So this is actually a bottom line issue because it's affecting insurance or the mod rate.
Yeah. It affects insurance. It affects productivity. It affects absenteeism. All of the above. And so why? Why does it do that? Well, stress comes from fear, which comes from our ego's need to protect us. So originally, you know, the whole notion of fight or flight, the fight or flight syndrome, you know, if you're exploring, look, you know, a primitive man, you're looking for a cave, first time you go in a cave, it's filled with saber-toothed tigers, and then you're nearly killed. Okay, your ego goes, be careful when you go into a cave. Or when you go into a river that has too strong a current. It is natural. It is valuable that fear, the signal of fear, is valuable to you. It protects you. Now, unfortunately, the only way your ego learns what to fear and what not to fear is through past experience. It has no cognitive insight about what could be fearful, only based on past experience. And it is good. Unless it happens all the time. Because here's what happens when you go into fight or flight. The blood moves from your brain to your organs, to your internal organs, to your arms and legs, so you can run or fight. So blood in your brain, blood in your organs is depleted to facilitate fighting or running. It's very useful in a fight. It's if you're stabbed or something, you're not going to bleed as much until you come out of this, you know, stressed situation. Your consciousness also narrows. And the last thing you want is a whole group of people who are in a bad mood, whose consciousness is narrowing. Because one of the key things that CEOs tell me and a study that Deloitte conducted a couple of years ago when they asked what are the two top things that you want to see in your culture, in your people, it's innovation and creativity. You don't want people's consciousness narrowing when innovation and creativity in a difficult economic environment is the most valuable asset that you have. Also, the reason stress creates all this illness is that we're in constant stress. It's not occasionally when we walk by a saber-toothed tiger den. It's not occasionally when we're threatened maybe once a month by some circumstance. Today, it's everywhere on the news. You know, you watch the local news and you don't hear about many things that are wonderful. You hear about everything that's going badly. Even in a company, most companies, and here's a way to start to control it, don't publish success stories. They publish, this is a problem we have and we got to do it. So your blood is constantly leaving your internal organs, hence heart attacks, ulcers, digestive issues, all of that. Because we seem to be under stress in fight or flight. Some people say up to 70% of our lives were in fight or flight. This is a once a month thing at best, the way it was designed to protect us. But here we are in this syndrome. That's why disease, 95% is caused by stress. That's why it's a natural reaction, but this constant barrage is always going to hurt you. It's going to hurt your productivity. It's going to hurt your morale, everything. Any questions on that? Anyone challenge me or doubt that? It's pretty much accepted notion. So the question is then, what can you do? You know, how can you control it? How can you as a leader or as a person control it? So, I mean, the only person you can control is yourself. And you cannot control others. You can control the environment that you live in. You can make some decisions about that, but if you need to work, you need to work. When you go into a company, particularly with the economic situation the way it is, the environment can be very stressful. The only thing you can manage is your own state of mind. Because it's your state of mind that causes stress. It's your state of mind that makes you upset. I mean, you know, if you look in your own life, one thing that might upset you might not upset your spouse or vice versa. Okay? So there aren't there are probably universal things that stress everybody. If somebody walks into the room with a gun, most people are going to get stressed, and rightfully so. Although I have some Marine buddies who would go, oh boy, I'm going to take this guy down. So they wouldn't be that stressed. They would go, oh wow, here we go. I get to use all my skills. So it is not, stress is not universally caused by the same things to different people. It's caused by the own reaction to the events at hand.
Paul, a question just came in. Can you be without stress and work 16 hours a day, 6 days a week? Is that possible?
Absolutely. The next slide addresses some of that. And this is the heart and soul of what we're going to talk about today. Your attitude or mood affects your perception. Well, like I said earlier, if you're in a bad mood, you're going to be more easily irritated, right? You're going to be more easily stressed. On the other hand, if you're in a good mood, and you know, how do you describe a good mood? It would be gratitude, love, joy, curiosity, interest, peace of mind, fun, humor, all these kinds of states of mind, right? Versus hate, anger, irritation, depression, disgust, right? Okay, so again, you're controlling your state of mind and you're making a decision based on your circumstances, how you're going to feel. So if you're working 14 hours a day, 6 days, still for 6 days a week, all right? There's a couple of decisions you can make about that. One is, I hate this. I hate being here. It's not fair to me. Those kinds of decisions, you're going to be stressed. Other decision you could make, and I know a lot of entrepreneurs in particular who are building their own business, building their own products, they're having a blast. They might be working 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, and yet this is their dream. They're working on their dream. So what they've decided is, hey, I like this. This is not work. Whereas another person might decide, I hate this. And the second person is going to be stressed. First person is not. Now, why is that? Okay. So there was a study done, which is summarized. Here's a book that really summarizes it, called Sanity, Insanity, and Common Sense by whole group of authors, but they're all psychologists. One of them is a friend of mine, Roger Mills. And basically, what they discovered through extensive research is that your higher moods, love, appreciation, generosity, kindness, patience, understanding, creativity, insight, humor, satisfaction, et cetera, are unconditioned states of mind. Which means they're natural states. I mean, if you look at a baby, somebody brings a baby in the office, providing the baby's diapers are clean and it's been fed, the kid's in a good mood. Curious. He's looking around. And the feeling that you get, you know, everything stops. Everybody wants to see the baby. Why? Because look at this little being. It's just glowing. Well, where did that come from? Right? You know, well, why does he feel so good? Can't even think. What causes the lower states of mind, right? Self-image, mental struggle, seriousness, impatience, boredom, defensiveness, effort, drudgery, incompatibility, blame, judgment, stress, burnout, emotional instability, all of that are constructed beliefs and assumptions that we have, that we've developed through our ego to protect ourselves. And every time something that sounds similar, say you had a problem with your father, he was overbearing and irrational, anything that even remotely resembles overbearing and irrational will stress you. These are constructed states of mind. It is not natural to be in a state of stress. It is not natural to be in a state of fear and judgment. These are things you learn. Now, some of it's important. You don't want to put your hand in a flame. You know, you feel the pain, you pull your hand out. So that's a physical warning, right? A psychological warning is stress, one of these lower states of mind. Physically, you wouldn't leave your hand in the flame and suffer. But how many of us continue to suffer from stress? Don't see it as a warning sign that psychologically, we are causing ourselves stress. You know, this is something that people generally hate when I say it. You know, I mean, if you're in a bad mood, your thinking is messed up. If you're angry, your thinking is messed up. Don't make any decisions of any consequence when you're in a bad mood, because you're not seeing the world the way it is. You're seeing it through your own filters. Next slide illustrates. It is self-created.
Paul, an interesting question just came in. They're all interesting, but this one is probably applicable to all of us. I'm going to try to summarize this. Manager, supervisor, somebody hears there's a problem with a client. They then need to fix it or react to it. Triggers them off. They then have a staff meeting. Let everybody know what's going on. They're not pleased. Everyone gets feared and stressed out. I think you're going to address this later on, but they basically want to know how to deal with that, because something has to be taken place in order to correct it so they don't lose the client. And how would that get conveyed without scaring everybody but getting a reaction or getting action take place?
Right. So I'll give you the big picture answer and then the little picture answer. So I have a friend who's a martial artist, black belt, just about everything. And we were watching a match. And in the match, he went through and predicted every time who would win. And so I said to him afterwards, I said, how do you do that? You must know these guys pretty well. He said, well, no, I don't really know this particular group of people. I can tell which person has the most stillness. That's the person that's going to win. The person that's most stressed, most concerned about winning, is not going to win, because that stress interrupts your ability to perform. Now, when there's a difficult business situation, we all have difficult business situations. I mean, customers get unhappy. Things happen. I mean, if you want to reduce stress, and here's people say, okay, well, if I work less, if I took more vacation days, I would be less stressed. No. Not necessarily. Your stress is self-generated. You bring yourself with you wherever you go. You know, I know when I go to Hawaii, I get irritated. The waiters are too slow. You know, they're on Hawaiian time. You know, they don't move fast. So until I get used to that, I'm like, Jesus, why did we order that? You know? So you don't have to be, and this is the belief we have, that if you're not stressed and sweating, you're not working hard enough. It's not true. If you're stressed, you're not getting as many results. And so the fear comes from the corporate culture, from what your manager might do to you, from what might occur if you lose the business. Any number of things are going to cause your fear. But the bottom line is it's your own psychology that causes it. It's not natural to be in a state of stress. It doesn't mean you can't respond from this calm, unstressed point of view. I mean, when I was a partner in a global consulting firm, you know, I would fly to New York and meet with a client that night, jump on a plane, fly to Paris or London, meet with a client. And, you know, when they hire consultants, they don't want someone who's stressed, irritated, and jet-lagged. So I found a way just to let go of stress. And the first thing is to realize it's caused by your own psychology, by your own ego, by how you think about things. That's the cause. You can control that. You can be calm in a difficult situation. And in fact, the best leaders are the stillness in the storm. The best companies, one of the people I interviewed for my new book, runs a company in Orange County that got nominated as the best place to work in Orange County. And their profits are great. Well, the CEO doesn't like a lot of drama. The CEO is a woman, by the way, which works on creating a clear understanding of where we're going. People feel like they're part of something. People feel like they're part of something important. I mean, a team, your team, you work with your team every day. I always say to my clients, that team should be a sanctuary, should be a place you guys are going and having fun, creating something, building a business, so on. Imagine if that's the way you saw your team. Yeah. Here's the other thing. One of the things that stresses people out is somebody will do something that triggers some past thing. Let's go back to the overbearing father example. So somebody raises their voice in the meeting and they get irritated or angry or respond back, you know. It has a circular effect. You start responding in an angry way that triggers other people, and suddenly you have some kind of tribal warfare going on. One thing that really impacted me is working in this consulting firm, and I was saying to one of my colleagues about the founder, he had done something that I decided was stupid. And he just said to me, Paul, he's only human. He's doing the best he knows how. And I realized in that moment, Absolutely. It's not perfect. Why am I getting upset? I expect him to be perfect. And I think that's one of the things that when I work with leaders, I ask them to take themselves off the pedestal. You're not perfect. Everybody knows that. So you don't have to be. And on the other side, I talk to the team and say, you know, the leader's not perfect. You're not perfect. Let's not get upset every time someone does something stupid. They're trying to do, they didn't come into work with the purpose of just screwing things up. They made a mistake. They said something they shouldn't have said. You know, forgiveness. Forgive yourself, the people around you. That doesn't mean you don't take action. That doesn't mean you don't do something differently. But now, if you're in a calm, clear state of mind, what you decide to do differently will be more effective, will be more a reaction to the reality around you instead of a reaction to your own internal psychology. You've got to work on your own internal psychology.
Well, well, those are great ideas. And I, a couple questions here.
Okay.
There's about a half dozen that came in here. I'm going to summarize just a couple of them. One is it suggested to maybe do fire drills with the team over whatever stressful thing can trigger off within a group, like a client calls and something happens, how to respond. Another question is, do some people have more stress because of DNA? And the third subject is around the gratitude. Is that something that should be discussed with a team?
Yeah, well, gratitude is the highest state of mind you can be in. So gratitude is important, that the leaders are grateful to the people are grateful to have a job, grateful to be part of the team. So if you can create a culture that has a lot of gratitude and forgiveness within it, you know, people are going to be a lot less stressed to begin with. They're just going to react to business problems and say, okay, we have a business problem, let's see what we do. Opportunity for us to use our creativity and our insight and our wisdom. So the culture that you create is pretty important. But nonetheless, it's still up to you in terms, you know, of how you react to things.
I forgot the other thing. What about the question regarding the DNA of people? People are
we could have a whole session on this. They have proven recently, that you can change your DNA. That you are born with a given DNA, right? But over time, you can change that through practice and, you know, psychological development. Yeah, this is a recent breakthrough. It's a pretty important one. Yeah. So, regardless, let's say you say, oh, well, you know, I'm naturally a high-strung person. Okay. Are you going to let that run your life, or are you going to find ways to break out of that habit? It's just a habit. Right? You don't see a baby being stressed unless they're hungry or need their diaper changed. Baby's not sitting there in your arms going, man, the economy's bad. Geez, am I going to have a job in 20 years when I grow up? No, it's not. And you can do the same thing. You don't have to be worrying about these things. It doesn't mean you don't take them into account. What was the third question?
Third question, actually, another couple came in. Companies and fire drills, is it helpful to have a team meeting on how to deal with stress and what if this happens?
Yes.
And then I think the other one of it is the theme are around, does somebody need to do deep psychotherapy to figure all this out, or are there other methods?
All right, I'm going to go over some methods here in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, you should really set the tone for dealing with problems as a leader or in your department, you know. This is a problem, but we're not going to get upset. We want to deal with it in a calm way. So, yeah, you need to set the context. It's not okay to yell and scream at each other. It's not okay to blame people. That's not how we operate here. We look for solutions. We're solution seekers. We seek solutions. We have problems. Now, of course, if you have an employee that continually makes mistakes and is just not prepared for their job, that's different. And you need to handle them separately, not in front of everybody. You know, you don't want to do things to stir up stress. And so, yeah, I think it's important that you talk out loud about how we're going to deal with stress, how we're going to deal with difficult situations. Yeah.
Okay, you come up with a game plan in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, you just don't make it okay to get too reactive. Like this woman I was talking about, she doesn't like drama. No drama. But she likes problems. She likes growing the company. And she appreciates her people all the time. And she creates a safe environment to work in. That's all good. But you may not be able to control that. You only control yourself. You may be in a company that has a shouter, has other people that are upset who are in management positions. You can't count on that. You've got to learn to manage your own psychology. And here's how to do it. So first of all, there are obvious things that release stress. Aerobics. People who run, ride bikes, so on. It's a great stress reducer because you're just in the zone, if you will, and it allows you to let go of stress. We all know that. Go and work out, whatever. Different forms of meditation. And, you know, meditation sounds like a mysterious word. It's not. It's practicing sitting quietly and letting go of your thoughts. When I teach my executives to meditate, they go, geez, I didn't do it right. I was sitting there and my brain was going the whole time. And I said, yeah, you did it right. You just have to learn not to. The whole purpose of meditation is to learn to let go of all those crazy thoughts you're having. Let them go. You know, and if you practice it, instead of thinking about things and move your attention to your breathing, which is the most essential thing to do, by the way. You know, food, you can go maybe 3 weeks, water maybe 3-4 days, and oxygen 3-4 minutes. So when you put your attention on that essential activity, that's meditation, and learn to let go of your thoughts. Humor. I mean, there's nothing like a good laugh to help you release stress. I had a client who used to have these in the office, in the lobby. He had had this big bowl in the old days when he had cassette tapes of stand-up comedian humorous tapes, you know, and encourage people on their breaks and at lunch, grab a tape, play it over lunch, have a laugh, you know. So things you can do like that. In terms of meditation, you know, you don't always need 30 minutes. I like to take a couple of minutes before an important meeting. I've done all my preparation. I got all my slides. I know generally what I'm going to say. But just maybe 3 minutes to sit quietly, play some nice music. Music's a universal language. Listening to relaxing music. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm on the freeway a lot. And I love rock and roll. Right? But not on the freeway. I want quiet, relaxing music to counteract the stress of driving in rush hour traffic. So music's another form of relaxation. Find out the things that calm you down and make the habit of doing them every day. And don't tell me you don't have time, because make the time. This is your state of mind. Only thing in the world you can control. you need to master how to control and put yourself into this natural state of mind. And all you have to do in the other slide, the next slide, kind of reverse it, is you've got to let go. It's not repressing. You cannot repress these bad moods, these negative thoughts that you have. You have to observe them. Oh, I'm angry at John again. And go, being angry is probably not a good state of mind. So whatever he did, he did. It's a letting go process. As thoughts come into your consciousness, you let go of them. You practice letting go. The other thing along the previous side is practice finding good moods. Practice living in that higher state of mind, that we call it above the line, in those natural states, of mind like gratitude and generosity, kindness. And do things that cause you to get into that mood. There's no, my book Unleashing Genius and my new book, I will say at the end of every chapter, there is no substitute for practice. Knowing what I just told you will not help if you don't practice quieting your mind, you don't practice relaxing, you don't practice doing the things that calm you, whatever it is. We had some woman that used to play these clogging contests in some form of dancing in the South, and she just loved it. So between meetings, if she's bad mood, she'd put one of these, you know, things in her ear and just listen to clogging music, and it just helped her calm down. I had another guy who was a scuba diver, and you know, wherever he went scuba diving, he would find one little small shell that represented that wonderful vacation, that wonderful experience. And he had this little bag that he kept in his pocket, little bag. And he put all these shells in there. And if he was stressed or going into a stressful situation, he'd reach in the bag and pull out a shell and kind of look at it and bring himself back to that wonderful vacation. Mm. Another guy who we had started working with a company in about 4 months prior to us working, he was the CEO. He had a massive heart attack. And, so he decided, he loved music, so he decided that a certain freeway underpass that he went under on the way home, he didn't want to bring that stress, he didn't want to bring any of that stuff home with him, so he'd play certain music when he approached that underpass, and if he hadn't calmed down by the time he went through it, he would get off the freeway, the next exit, and go back through it until, you know, he finally could arrive home stress-free. And that was the line. He drew the line. This was the line. This is it. I'm going to let go. Now, I would draw the line earlier, but, you know, that's just one thing that he did to save his family from his own stress. No substitute for practice. Men know the difference. Now, this might seem simple. I mean, you certainly know when you're angry and when you're peaceful or grateful. But there's a gradient in between. You want to know yourself. Know what's stressing you. Know your stress. Some people think it's just normal to be in this agitated state of mind. And that's where practice comes in. You practice. You learn to calm your mind. You learn that, you know, much of what people say is just sound, like Shakespeare said, like a player strutting there, minute upon the stage, full of sound and fury that signifies nothing. You know, people are just doing the best thing. People are just reacting based on their history. Just forgive them. Forgive yourself. And just let go of that. If you practice letting go of these thoughts that stress you, you will naturally feel grateful. You will naturally feel joyous. You don't have to do anything. It is a natural state. All you have to do is let go of what is stressing you. And that takes practice. You know, I'm an immigrant, and I know I get no sympathy for being an immigrant from England, and people kind of laugh. But believe me, in the 1950s, it was not popular to be English, and I was attacked and abused and made fun of until I got rid of my accent.
Right.
But it still comes up for me, you know. I still have thoughts about my own, and people are talking about me. It's always going to happen. Any psychological trauma that you have is going to repeat, it's going to come up. You can't stop it, but you can recognize it and let it go. And as you learn to let it go, you will fall into this peaceful state of mind, because that's the natural way to live. And it just takes that rigorous practice. Takes knowing when you're in a bad mood, not when you start screaming, but before that. You know, there's always like a sequence of events that leads to a blow up, you know. And I can't tell you how important forgiveness is. Because people are going to do dumb things. People are going to try to upset you. Or do it by accident. You just have to forgive them. And respond in a way that is appropriate, you know, to protect you or to get to solve the problem. But you don't have to respond in a state of fight or flight. Matter of fact, you're going to respond much better if you're not in that state. Because you're not going to be filtering it through your fears, so you go through all the stuff that has built up into everybody's life. You know, life is tough. So.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Wow. The practice finding good moods, practice letting go, practice forgiveness, and practice gratitude.
Yeah.
In just a few minutes after we conclude this show, we're going to turn off the recording equipment, and we're going to open up the line so you can have an opportunity to talk directly with Paul. Paul, why don't you go to the last screen there? You'll see on your screen an area to register for our upcoming September 19th open line program, which is entitled The Keys to Using Performance Incentives. So please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and a PowerPoint for today's program, so please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Paul and I want to thank you so much for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Paul directly for further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, yourself, to have some one-to-one time together or to discuss any of the ideas today, you'll see Paul's contact information on the screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in San Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track open line program. So hold the line. Let me just turn off the equipment, and we'll be right back in just a second.